Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
The debate began in antiquity over who Seneca was and whether to admire him has never been resolved, so writes acclaimed classical historian James Rahm in his new book, Dying Every Day, Seneca at the Court of Nero. Rama, in his new book, is an attempt to unite the man seen then and now as both wise sage and political power broker into one being in this landmark text. At once a biography and a narrative history, Rahm delivers the first English language assessment of a man whose philosophical writings and political service shaped ancient Rome. Again, the title of the book is Dying Every Day, Seneca at the Court of Nero. It is published by Knopf, and a great pleasure to welcome James Rahm back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
What brought you to Seneca and wanting to take on this very large project?
Well, it's always been a fascination for me, the complexities of Seneca's writing, above all, his written style, which is very beautiful, and his great variety of written works, some of them comic, some of them tragic, most of them philosophical and essayistic. And then combine that complexity with his political career under Nero, which made him virtually the regent for the entire Roman Empire, and you have just a rip-roaring good story.
I should mention, of course, you were the James Ottaway Professor of Classics at Bard College. How much in what you teach and what you do you come across Seneca? Do you want that to be part of what you teach?
Yes, I do. I taught a course called Seneca and Nero to my Bard undergraduates 4 or 5 years ago, and that in some ways was the genesis of this book. Reading the text alongside the history of Nero's time and trying to put the two together, trying to ascertain how someone could have written these beautiful exhortations toward moral virtue while collaborating in some of Nero's worst crimes. It's a great mystery.
When you think of truths being stranger than fiction, Seneca's life, early life, certainly, that falls into that category.
Yes. Well, I wouldn't say his early life, but his mature life.
Yes,
his adult life under Nero was really stranger than fiction. He rose from obscure roots, from being almost a nobody, to being virtually the ruler of the Roman Empire, simply because his moral virtue and his written style made him an ideal candidate to be Nero's tutor and his steersman.
So when it comes to that point where there is the intersection of Seneca and Nero, what is important for us to know about the backstory to that to put it into a context?
Well, it's important to know that Nero was the youngest emperor ever to come to power in Rome, probably anywhere in the ancient world. He was only 16 at the time when he became ruler of the Roman world, at an age when we don't even allow teenagers to drive. And of course, he needed lots of guidance and stabilization. He didn't have a father. His father had died when he was a very young man. And his mother was kind of a tyrannical manipulator and wanted to control him and use him to further her own quest for power. So Nero badly needed an ally, and Seneca was the perfect person to help him to gain some maturity and some independence from his mother.
When it comes to your sources, of course, Seneca's writings are chief among them. So what do we get from those writings, and what then, besides those writings, were you looking for to fill in some of the blanks?
The history of Tacitus was a major source for me. Tacitus was very interested in Seneca and writes about him extensively in his annals, but his tone is very hard to discern. He seems to have had the same problems or the same confusion over Seneca that I have had and many interpreters have had, whether to admire him or condemn him. Tacitus does both at different times.
And with that, give us an idea of the strength of his writing, of getting a true sense of him through that writing.
Well, it's funny. Seneca was both the most honest and the most dishonest writer of all of ancient Rome. He revealed his own soul as much as he could. He was extremely introspective and self-revealing. He wanted to talk about his inner thoughts, his fears, his aspirations as a philosopher. He was in some ways the antecedent of our modern-day bloggers or memoirists. But at the same time, he could not write about his political career. It was simply too dangerous. So he leaves these huge gaping holes in the record, talking about himself, yet not being able to tell the truth about what he was doing with Nero for 15 years.
You also used the play Octavia.
Yes. The play Octavia, which is a Roman play written only a year or two after Nero's reign ended.
And we don't know the author, right?
We don't know the author. It's actually preserved as a work of Seneca's, but almost certainly is not. Uses Seneca as a character, as well as Nero, and dramatizes their relationship. It's really a very remarkable document.
And it shows just how of the women characters in this story and in his life, and how important, strong, and resonant they are.
Yes. It has Octavia. She's the heroine of the story, as the title indicates. She was Nero's wife and also his adoptive sister, because the family was very closely inbred.
Right.
Also Agrippina appears as a ghost, Nero's mother, a very fearsome ghost who comes to exult over Nero's coming downfall.
What do you think that ultimately tells us about the relationship between men and women in this period in ancient Rome?
Well, Agrippina makes a very interesting study, especially for feminists. She was a woman who wanted power, wanted imperial power. Really, she would have made a great emperor if she had been male. She couldn't be emperor. She tried to make her son emperor and rule more or less through him. And that worked for a while, until Nero became old enough that he wanted to throw off her influences and rule independently. And at that point, their relationship began to deteriorate. But for a while, she was really close to a female ruler of Rome.
And Octavia's story, as you note, is really one of the most tragic.
Yes. Octavia is one of the tragic figures in my book. She, let me see if I can get the sequence straight. She first watched her stepmother kill her father, then her husband kill her brother, and finally had to live with a man as her husband who detested her. And she was totally alone in the world.
It's hard to believe just how horribly she was treated.
Yes.
By Nero.
Yes, he seems to have had no love from her for the start. She was simply a way to breed the perfect heir to the throne who would have solidified his rule, but she never conceived. And finally, he ended up having her executed very gruesomely in a place called Pandateria.
And Seneca's wife, Paulina, you would expect to be more a central part of the story, but what really isn't until the end.
Yes. Seneca spoke very little about his wife in his writings. It's one of the big gaps in the record. He was married to the same woman for most of his life and apparently was quite happy with her, and she with him. And apparently she tried to share his suicide at the end of his life. But we know almost nothing about her. He says almost nothing to tell us who she was.
You talk about this at the beginning of the book, about the two Senecas. And how much did you think of that in the writing of the book and in dispatching the various resources that you used in researching the book, as to trying to come to one or to make a case for both?
I tried to come to a unified view of a very complex man. And I found that I was partly successful in doing that. But in part, my story is about the mysteries of human nature, how we can talk ourselves into doing things that we really believe are wrong, or allow ourselves to slide away from our ideals and end up living a life that in no way corresponds to the life that we want or envision for ourselves. That's really Seneca's story. It's about the mysteries of the human character.
Your book is rare in being an English language book about this story. Why is that so rare?
Well, I think because of the complexity. I think a lot of authors have wanted to look either at the philosophical Seneca, and they've written lots of studies about that, or about the political actor, and in that way he figures into the history of Nero's reign. But it's very hard to bring the two together. And a couple of people have attempted it in foreign languages, but so far no one in English except for me.
But you make that case in the sense of, you know, you can be a wise sage and a political power broker and be effective.
Yes, he was very effective. And for a long time, he helped keep Nero on track and made Nero's regime much better than it would have been otherwise. But eventually he lost influence.
Mm. Nero's relationship with his mother is in some ways classic, but also tragic.
Yes. It's very much a weak and insecure boy who is dominated by a terrifyingly powerful mother and eventually feels he has to get free of her, and the only way to do that is by murdering her. And Nero's murder of Agrippina is the emotional climax of my book. It's an unforgettable scene, which fortunately Tacitus has preserved for us in great detail.
When it comes to the book and the end story of Seneca, what do you hope people take away from his story and ultimately from dying every day?
Well, several things. I think that just having this window into an era of Roman history is a fascinating privilege that Seneca gives us. He allows us to see a Roman emperor or a period of Roman autocracy from the inside, from a perspective of a thoughtful, self-aware, and brilliant writer. That's a remarkable gift, to have that kind of witness to Roman history. Secondly, I think it has a message about politics, about the perils of political involvement. You can go into politics with the best of intentions, ideals, and hopes, and a vision of a moral politics, but inevitably circumstances will force you to bend and to adjust your ideals to the temper of the times. And you're on a slippery slope as soon as you set foot into politics.
And that is universal.
I think so. I think it's very much a message for our times. We want our leaders to be moral and ideal, but we know that in order to become leaders, they've had to commit all kinds of dirty deeds. It's just the way politics works nowadays. The book has been compared to House of Cards, which I haven't watched, but I get the impression that there are some resonances, that politics is now increasingly seen from the dark side, from the perspective of the bodies that have to be left in one's wake as one rises to the top.
And, absolutely.
Seneca's story is really all about that.
The name of the book is Dying Every Day, Seneca at the Court of Nero. It is published by Knopf. James Rahm, I thank you very much for spending time with us. Best of luck with the book.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Again, the title of the book is Dying Every Day, Seneca at the Court of Nero. It is published by Knopf. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.